not just today, but to tomorrow. And so with that, I want to turn it over to Representative Painter to introduce the people that we are here to hear from.
Thank you. Again, welcome. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for being here tonight. Welcome to ASU Mountain Home. This is my alma mater, so it's a privilege to have everybody here tonight. So without further ado, it's my distinct honor and privilege to introduce my friend, the 47th Governor of the state of Arkansas, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and Secretary of Education, Olivia.
Thank y'all so much. Jacob, I feel like we should quit right now.
I was like, this is the best. We've done almost a dozen of these. This is the warmest, best welcome I think we've received. So thank you.
We've done a lot of these, and certainly we like this crowd the best of them all. Just don't tell anybody else in another part of the state and get us in trouble. But we are so thankful for your willingness to be here tonight. We know how hard it is to get out in the evening after you've put in a hard day of work, especially during the summer. And we are so grateful for your willingness to come out and spend a little bit of time with us here tonight. I am so unbelievably proud of why we are here. Today, August 1st, is the full enactment of the LEARNS Act, one of the most historic, comprehensive education reform packages in our state's history, and a truly transformational piece of legislation. And I see a number of our legislative friends and partners here on the front row, and this would not have happened without their dedication, their diligence, and just their steadfast commitment to making sure that we delivered for the students and parents of this state. At the end of the day, I think like every person in this room, I'm a mom, I have three kids, and I'm frustrated. I'm tired of seeing our state at the bottom. I'm tired of Arkansas being 47th, 48th, 49th, and in many cases, 50th in all the places that we want to be first and second. Places I know we have the capacity and the potential to be at the top, yet we've simply been satisfied and allowed ourselves to stay with and stick with the status quo. To me, that's unacceptable because I know our kids deserve better and I know we are capable as a state of doing better. And so that's exactly what the LEARNS legislation is all about. It's about taking our state to the top. And that's exactly what we've been able to do. We're gonna focus on things like major investment in our state's literacy. I'm tired of watching our kids compete at the very bottom when only 35% of Arkansas third graders are reading at or above a third grade reading level. That's not good enough. We can do better, and we will. When our teachers are at the lowest end in teacher pay anywhere in the country, number 48th, when we have the ability to be in the top five, that's exactly what we did through the LEARNS legislation. When we have the ability to empower parents to make the best decision possible about where and how their kids are educated, then we should do that. And that's what we were able to do and deliver through the LEARNS Act. I could not be more proud of what I think this means for our state and most importantly for our students. We want to spend tonight not lecturing but listening. We're happy to answer as many questions as we can. We'll spend time working around the room. If people will just take time and raise their hand, Secretary Leva and I will get to as many as we can because we're proud of this legislation. We want to make sure that we have the opportunity to get to as many places around the state as possible to talk about it. I think this is our 9th town hall, and we are so thankful again for your willingness to be here tonight, and we will certainly answer a lot of questions and hopefully have a little fun along the way. And with that, I will turn it over to Secretary Oliva, who I'm going to make show his socks because he's really proud of them.
Well, they're
and he is very big on wearing fun, colorful socks, and I'll let him tell you why he's wearing those today. But thank you again for being here tonight, and we look forward to a great back and forth and discussion with all of you. Jacob.
Thank you. So thank you, Governor Sanders, and I want to echo the sentiments and thank everybody for coming out and engaging in conversation to help be more informed and learn about what is some of our agency's priorities and how can we overall improve student outcomes. So today is officially the day that the LEARNS bill goes from planning to implementation. So I'm thankful to Governor Sanders for the vision to help outline a blueprint that we're able to put into policy now that we're going to be able to implement and see positive change. So I did wear cupcakes on my socks because I felt like it was a celebration. And if you're going to have a party, you can't not have a party without cupcakes, right? So I'm excited to be engaged in this work. And if there's anything that we know in education is that a one-size-fits-all approach does not work. And if that's the way our system is set up, then that system's not set up to make sure that all students are successful. And we know that I think we can do a little bit better job. And a lot of times I like to say, bad systems beat good people every time. So are we making sure we're building out the right system? So when you look at that kind of omnibus overall approach to educational reform across the state, it's really from cradle to career. It starts at early learning, realigning early learning opportunities, making sure that every family that wants to participate in quality childcare and early learning environments have an opportunity to do so. Right now, that system's a little bit fragmented and it's not coordinated. LEARNS is pulling all of those programs under one agency so we can have a common vision of what does quality early learning look like and look at how we measure kindergarten readiness. We know those foundational years in literacy are critical. Investing in K-2 by making sure teachers, the best teachers we can recruit, retain, and recognize, have access to high quality evidence-based curriculum and best practices that we know will help support students. Also access to literacy coaches, access to parents that see that if their children are struggling, they have an opportunity to get additional tutoring and additional services outside of the school day. So really building out those foundational years. And then also looking at the different career path opportunities that students have all the way from elementary, middle, and high school. We know that every student is not on the highway to university. That may ultimately be the goal, but building out opportunities, one of the things that I'm really excited about with the LEARNS initiative is developing and implementing what's called a career high school diploma, where we have students that are earning industry certifications, earning stackable credentials of value. How do we articulate into a high school diploma that they can then transfer to a receiving institution if they want to be able to do that? Right now, we have students that are completing those high quality programs while they're in high school. And depending on the receiving institution will depend whether or not they recognize those credentials or certificates. And sometimes we tell students, well, you didn't earn it here, you have to start all over again. Well, that's not fair, and then we wonder why people get frustrated. So when we talk about moving the needle and we talk about kind of ranking in the bottom, U.S. News and World Report recently did a ranking, and I'm not saying it's the best methodology on how they look at education, but it looks at states. And it starts all the way from how do you do with early learning, how do you do in K-12, and how do you do in post-secondary, and it ranks them 1 through 50. So when we look at where Arkansas ranked overall, the current ranking was 43. One of the things that I found interesting is I've been able to go across this wonderful state, meet with teachers, meet with superintendents, educational cooperatives, really get a kind of an update in the state of the state. I actually did a high school student panel discussion, and it was with educators, and these were students that were in high school that wanted to be aspiring teachers. And we were just talking about LEARNS and improving outcomes and opportunities. And I remember I asked the students, I said, you know, U.S. News and World Reports came out and ranked states in education. These are kids in 10th, 11th, and going into 12th grade. I said, where does Arkansas rank? Oh, probably 50th. These are our own students saying not one of them said anything higher than 45. So when we look at the system, I think we look at opportunity. And if our students don't have hope or belief that they're getting the best educational opportunities, then sometimes the system is failing them, which is why we're really excited to start with LEARNS implementation. And one of the things that I've learned as we've been moving forward is there's a lot of misinformation out there, and there's a lot of people that have really wonderful questions, and there's a lot of opportunity to continue this momentum to get even better. So as I went to every single co-op and met with every superintendent and reported back to the governor about how productive these conversations have been, is one of the outcomes of this is let's have some town hall meetings and meet with community members and talk to them about what we're doing and hear what kinds of questions they have and have an opportunity to engage in dialogue so how we can work together to improve and see better outcomes. So thank you for being here today. We're really excited to engage in some questions.
And with that, we will open it up. If you guys have a question, feel free to raise your hand. Becca and Catherine are here, and we'll walk around with the microphone so everybody can hear the question as you have it. And if nobody has one, then I will call on Secretary Oliva to sing and dance, and nobody wants to see that. So.
Well, we can sing like a happy birthday
song. One right here,
song.
Catherine.
Happy Learns Day to you.
With the state's current budget surplus, which you should be very proud of, will any of this money be guided to help the LIMS Act and help the teachers with payments, increased salary, and you know, maybe work some of that money to your program? Thank you.
You know, I wish that they would let me just decide where all of the surplus money got spent. Unfortunately, I have to work with all my friends here on the front row to make that decision, but I'm confident that we will work together closely to do things like investing further in education, as well as passing that savings on to the taxpayer. One of the things I've been very vocal about and going to continue to be focused on, and one of the things I'm very proud that we were able to do this legislative session, was continue chipping away at our state's income tax. And we're going to keep doing that. And having a budget surplus like this allows us to keep doing that. So we're going to keep putting our heads down, working aggressively to phase that out over time, and also focus on investing in things like education and public safety, which is certainly a priority that I have, that I know I share with my friends in the legislature. That's the long answer to say we're going to have to figure that out, and we're going to have to do it together, and they're not going to let me do it all by myself. But if you want to change that, I'm happy to take on that responsibility and do that all by myself, but you'll have to talk to these guys for that. And thank you for your question. We'll jump here and then we'll pop over.
Okay. Governor, thank you. We talk about money, and we've heard so many times that throwing money at problems doesn't seem to fix it. I don't know if you've heard of this is an old program, PISA program. And I did a little study on that in this for the state of Arizona. And as the funding went up, more money was allocated into administration, less money every year allocated to the classrooms and into areas that to especially beginning teachers. And so when we talk about throwing money or just giving money out, I think it's the allocation of the money and where that money is going to go and how it's going to be spent. So it is spearheaded right to the target where it needs to go, and not just given to be spent any way that any particular district decides where they want to put it.
I couldn't agree more. I don't think there's anything dumber than throwing more money into an already broken system, which is why we couldn't just say, here's more money, go see what happens. We didn't make just decisions in a vacuum. There are hundreds of thousands of dollars of research that informs this piece of legislation. We didn't just sit around and say, you know what, I feel like this could work. It is all evidence-based legislation. We know beyond a shadow of a doubt that one of the most important data markers there is for any student's long-term success is whether or not they're reading at that make or break moment of third grade. If a student is not reading by that point, we know we are setting them up for a lifetime of failure. If you look in our prisons across the state of Arkansas, 70% of those who are incarcerated can't read. It is a telling thing that only 35% of Arkansas third graders are hitting that basic benchmark. We have at least a dozen or more counties where less than 10% of their third graders are reading at or above a third grade reading level. We have to do more. So we didn't just throw more money into a broken system. We went in and we made specific changes that we know work because we've seen it happen in other states. You look at a state like Mississippi, which has a really similar demographic makeup to Arkansas, and they started investing heavy in literacy. Immersion programs similar to what we've done. They went from being tied, fighting with Arkansas there at the bottom, to number 22 in the country in terms of literacy, and they're continuing to move up. We took a lot of the things that we saw working in other states and implemented them through this. reading coaches being one of the biggest. 120 reading coaches that are specialists, hired and paid for by the state, that will go into districts of highest need. We've already been able to hire 75 of those individuals that will be in districts this fall. They're undergoing training and additional resource allocation, and they will be hitting districts across the state here in the next couple of months. We know that works because we've seen it already. So we're not just throwing money into the system. We also wanted to make sure we were rewarding our hardworking teachers, and wanted to make sure that money actually hit teachers' pockets. And so when we raised teacher pay, we didn't just arbitrarily do that. We went from 48th to top five, going from 36,000 to 50,000 at that base salary, making us competitive with every other state in the country, helping us not only retain some of our best teachers, but recruit new teachers to come in the classroom. We also ensured for those who were already making above that amount that every single teacher in the state of Arkansas gets at least a $2,000 raise, all paid for by the state. And part of the stipulation with that to make sure it gets into teachers' pockets is that we required 80% of that funding to go directly to teachers' salaries, which has not been the case in the past. And so we made some really, again, specific changes, changing a focus on things like workforce development. One of the things I think Secretary Oliva alluded to was the new dual track diploma that we have created and implemented into high schools so that a student has multiple options and pathways for success. We have kind of perpetuated, frankly, a lie to kids, not just in Arkansas, but across the country for decades, that if somehow a student doesn't go to a four-year university, they're somehow less than, when nothing could be further from the truth. There are a lot of kids who have a different pathway to success, and we need to help put those opportunities in front of them, and that's exactly what that dual track diploma does. I know this is a really long answer, but there is a lot of really specific evidence-based things in this legislation that we know work, and that's why we're so excited to see them implemented here in the state of Arkansas. And I'll let Secretary Oliva add to that, because I know he'll have some additional things to say.
So, well, that was well done. You're doing, you're learning a lot about all this, the nuances and ins and outs of schools, but I think overall to support Governor Sanders is you're right. And superintendents, school boards, principals, every day, there are some challenges with balancing budgets, and the school districts are facing some of the same realities that industries are facing. When diesel prices go up, the cost of running buses go up. When the power bills go up, they feel that too. The cost of food is going up. The cost of construction has been a real challenge for school districts because 5 years ago, you could do commercial, build commercial projects on your schools if you're doing renovations for about $250 a square foot. Now it's $300 to $400 a square foot because they're feeling those supply chain demands as well. But I think what those school leaders would tell you is at the end of the day, they have to protect the classroom. And when you look at the initiatives and priorities and learns, it really supports the schools with giving them dollars in a category that's outside of their school budget so that their school budget that they receive historically through their foundation funding isn't impacted by increasing teacher salaries, because we wanted to make sure that those dollars didn't get lost into a very confusing formula, but actually hit those teachers to give them the rightful increases in salaries that they deserve. And then even through Governor Sanders' vision, is there some pilot programs to even incentivize districts to apply for additional dollars to not only compensate highly effective teachers that would come outside of their budget so that they can, as a state, we can recognize and reward those individuals. But even there's an innovation, transportation innovation pilot, because the cost of transportation and logistics for a school district is high. When you figure the average school bus could be $100,000. So if you look at what is the cost for an average school bus run, it's $30,000 to $40,000. If you have a school bus that gets 6 miles to the gallon and the prices of diesel go up, schools are gonna fill that. So are there more innovative ways to look at transportation? We have a pilot program inside of LEARNS that's gonna to work with districts to find ways to do that, because if we can use our resources more efficiently in other areas, then we can reallocate those dollars back into the classroom where we know that return on investment will be multiplied indefinitely.
Great. We'll go here and then we'll come to Becca. Make sure on the front row.
I just wanted to say it's really refreshing to see someone thinking outside of the box, because the status quo hasn't been working. And the voucher system has proven to help overall education, especially like places like Denmark and other places around the world. But my concern is with just across the board raise to teachers, does this have any incentive like Tennessee does with the Master Teacher Program to give teachers a reason to teach better, you know, than they have?
Absolutely. There are a couple things that are in the legislation, and one is that there are opportunities for teachers to make up to $10,000 additional dollars in merit-based incentives, as well as teachers who are willing to go into higher demand subject area needs and specific demographics in a district that may have trouble recruiting. So there are some specific things that incentivize, as well as loan payback programs where the state will cover the cost of teachers' student loans to help them alleviate some of that burden so that they're more focused on the classroom and being able to stay there. Secretary Leib, I know you've spent a lot of time in this space. There are specific things like that that we've included in the legislation that certainly, I think, incentivize teachers. One of the things that I feel like often gets lost in the conversation is that somehow this is not pro-teacher. It's the largest investment that we have made in our public schools and our public school teachers in decades. And I have to commend the legislators that are sitting over here on the front row, because we worked very closely, and this was something every single one of us came to the table and said, we want our teachers to understand that we know that they have value, that we know that our students do better when they have great teachers. And so we wanted to incentivize them with a higher base pay, but also include some of those additional incentives that you mentioned and that you talked about.
And I think to the point, what is really great about what the legislation does in regard to salaries is it returns those decisions back to the local school district. So instead of having a statewide salary schedule that pushes everybody into one model that doesn't allow for innovation and flexibility, this now gives local school districts the opportunity to develop a salary schedule that works best for them, because they know the teachers and what and the students that they're serving in their community. So if they're having a hard time staffing chemistry or physics teacher and want to develop an incentive to recruit and recognize and retain individuals that are in typical hard to staff areas, they now have the flexibility to do that. One of the things that school districts, and we were talking to superintendents across the state about how they're going to develop a salary schedule that works best for them, that I encourage them to do, is on the old status, the old salary schedule, you can be ranked unsatisfactory and make more money the next year because you breathe for a year. Well, I think that's ludicrous. If you are unsatisfactory, you shouldn't be guaranteed a raise. Like, we should be able to link expectations for the behaviors we want to incentivize and build a salary schedule around that. So school districts now have that flexibility and they have that control, and they're using that flexibility to their advantage.
Thank you for your question.
There's a question over here.
Thank you, Governor, for coming. I know parents and grandparents here, we want to support the teachers, but this is about our children and our grandchildren. We want them learning math, science, reading, arithmetic, history. We want them to be incentivized, the students more than the teachers. I mean, we need the teachers incentivized, but the students get lost in all of this. Well, we have to have right gender things, and we have to have furry conversations. Let's stick to teaching what's important. Let's get our children excited about being Americans, about what America is about. When they get excited, they want to learn. They will grasp these topics and more. But if it's just a matter of, you know, no child left behind, therefore nobody can get an award for being an outstanding student, we're going to lose our students no matter how good the teachers are. And we need the teachers to be responsible to the parents. The parents want to know what their children are doing. No more of this behind closed doors. Oh, don't tell your parents what we're talking about. Throw that out. Let's clean up our libraries. Let's clean up our libraries. We don't want our children reading pornography. We don't want our children exposed to dancers in obscene costumes. We want our school boards to be able to read books that our children are being exposed to and not deny them because they're pornographic. If they're too pornographic for the school board, they're too pornographic for our children. Let's support our children first.
I don't disagree at all. It's why we pass legislation doing exactly those things. We're fighting them in court, and we're going to continue to do that. I hope that the critics and the opponents know I don't back down very easily, and I fully expect and anticipate that we will win in court on each of these issues, because I don't disagree. Protecting our kids has to be one of our first fundamental responsibilities that we have, and that's why we put specific things in this legislation to ban the indoctrination of our children, getting rid of things like CRT, and focusing on the things that we know put kids on a pathway to success. The other piece of that is we have given parents the ability to choose another path if the school that they're attending isn't meeting their students' needs. I think that's why the education freedom accounts are so important, because it puts power back into the hands of the parents. I also think a really important thing here is that we might want to recruit you to run for the school board. So be careful. If you do that good of a job in front of this crowd and get that kind of applause, we may put you on the hook. So thank you.
I had a question. I want to commend you, Governor, for in the legislature for raising the teacher's salary. Personally, I don't think they even get paid enough, but that's a great step. If you'd be kind enough to explain to everybody about the voucher system and how you're going to monitor it.
Sure. There's a couple pieces of this. First, we're going to phase it in over the course of the next 3 years. Right now, we have 90 schools across the state that have applied and been approved and will participate in education freedom accounts representing all parts of the state. And about 4,500 students have already applied and been approved to participate in the program for this upcoming school year. We focused this first year on students of greatest need, those in F schools, foster kids, some very specific areas. Next year, we'll add additional kids in to the program, and by the third year, it will be open for everybody. But we didn't want to just open the floodgates wide without there being some accountability for the schools that participate. Number one, a school gets to decide whether or not they participate. If they don't want to, they don't have to. But if they do and they choose to participate and accept education freedom account dollars, they have to be willing to implement a standardized testing that would be similar to what you might have in a public school. I'll let Secretary Oliva go into a little bit more detail on that, because we want there to be accountability. That's also available for homeschool parents. However, one of the things that I think people are lost on is that the government's just going to be mailing out checks. That's not accurate. The money will go directly to the school up to the certain amount for each of those students that are approved and enrolled in the program. When it comes to homeschool, it would have to be used for specific needs that are directly tied to education. If your family wants to go out and buy an Xbox, it's not going to be covered through an education freedom account. But if they want to buy curriculum and textbooks and things of that nature, then that would be an approved expense and allowed under the education freedom account.
Yeah.
Secretary Levin.
And to the point, there is built-in accountability, and as we're phasing this over the next few years, we're adopting state board rules and going through the processes to make sure that we can do that, because we want to make sure that we have quality choice programs and not just choice for the sake of having choice. So we're going to hold, if a private school chooses to participate, we'll be able to publish the scores, because they're going to take a standardized assessment from an approved list, and then we'll be able to publish to so parents can see how the students are doing in that school, and then the parent can be informed, well, maybe they're getting the results that we're hoping for, maybe they're not. The payments aren't going to be automatic. There's a big misperception that there's direct payments going to families. That is not going to happen. That system is never going to be set up in the state of Arkansas, and we're going to monitor that.
That's a big misconception.
It's a very big misconception. And in fact, even for the private school component, when the school becomes an approved provider, We also vet through the parents' application to make sure that they qualify. Those payments are distributed quarterly. So if there's a bad actor in that space, whether it's on the family side by not continuing to go to school or on the school side, those payments would cease and we would not be able to participate in that program because we're going to monitor to make sure those dollars are going where they're intended to go.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, thank you very much for raising the salaries for the teachers. Thank you for adding the VOTEC, because my older brothers and sisters, who would be like 100 today, had that option when they went to school. However, I have some long-term concerns for small school districts, and we have a number of them here in this area: Brunner Pilot, Norfolk, Cotter, Lead Hill, Viola. How are these school districts going to afford the salaries for the teachers in future years if it's not fully funded by the state? Are they
Can
going
I stop
to have
you real fast? I just want to correct one thing. It is fully funded by the state in perpetuity. This isn't a 1 or 2 or 3 year program. We looked at this for the long term, and the state is on the hook. Whatever funding a school received prior to the passage of LEARNS, they still receive, and now they will receive additional funding to cover the cost of all teacher raises in perpetuity. So the state is on the hook, it's not the district, and that's one of the biggest, I think, things that is being peddled that is simply just not true.
Okay. Thank you very much for that, because I was concerned about these smaller school systems having to consolidate or cut programs. They're such integral parts of their communities and the families and the students. And I'm glad to hear that, and I'm glad there's subsidies for house, for transportation, because in the last 2 school years, we have brought 10,000s of children here on school trips to see books come alive on stage. We brought Jungle Book here, Paddington Bear here, Call of the Wild here, Newton's Laws of Motion here. And I'm hoping that we'll continue next year with those kinds of programs. For we had like 11 different school systems come here. So I'm glad to hear that, because I was very worried about that.
Yeah, I'll let Secretary Oliva had something he wanted to comment on that.
So, and we hear that a lot about the small and rural districts, and I'm glad Governor Sanders cleared up the funding, because the school districts receive their funding that they receive historically. Now, they may go up in enrollment, they may go down. Their funding's going to change based on the population they serve, but the dollar amount to support LEARNS is a complete different separate category in the state budget that the legislature supported. And we hear a lot of, I used to hear a lot, and as we've been talking and clarifying those communications, in fact, we had a real small rural district in the Delta that was almost, it was on the process of being consolidated, and we started using LEARNS, the flexibility applied in LEARNS, to keep that district open. Our mindset is, if you have a local school board that's balancing a budget where students are learning and you have excelling schools and parents are happy, keep on doing that. If your school system is failing students, we're going to be knocking on your door. I mean, and that's our role, is to hold people accountable and make sure they're doing that. But I will tell you, one of the best things for small and rural districts, because a lot of our small districts, because they may not generate the dollars that larger districts do, because there's an economy of scale and there's a cost of doing business. There's some very realities to running school districts. So a lot of them, their minimum salary was $36,000 a year. There's about 6 or 7 small and rural districts in the state where not one teacher made over $50,000 a year in the entire district. Now every teacher is going to make at least $50 or $50,000 a year. So when you're able to raise disposable income in everybody's in the education system, which in many small rural districts is the largest employer, the community feels that impact. This is the biggest investment for small and rural communities that the state could probably have made.
One other thing that I think is really important too is that we also passed legislation this session that would prohibit a school from closing simply on the size. So often there are other factors at play, and so we removed some of that, I think, stipulation because there was a lot of question around that. There's usually a number of other factors. As Secretary Oliva said, if it's simply because you went below a certain threshold, but you're performing at a high level and your students are doing great, we want to see that continue. Nobody wants to see those doors close. In fact, we want to figure out how to get more kids and copy what you're doing, not shut it down. And so it's so rare that a school ever is pushed below, and that legislation protects specifically for that, so that those school districts that are doing well, or those schools that are doing well, can continue to serve their students in a way that we know they'll be successful.
There's some questions over here. Oh, wait, you got one back there.
Oh, we'll go here and we'll come back.
Thank you for explaining those last two questions. That helped a lot to understand what you're doing. One quick question I had was in Yellville, Marion County, we've introduced the Barton reading program for dyslexic and reading impaired students, and that's been helping very well. And in fact, we found out that it seems like those impaired by those things are actually very smart IQ, but they just get their syllables and their brain doesn't quite function in the right way for reading English. So is Barton going to be a statewide option?
I'm glad you said option, because a lot of times I get asked those questions about, are we going to mandate a specific curriculum from the state? So I believe in local control. The school district needs to have the flexibility to adopt a curriculum that works best for the students and the teachers they serve. But what we're doing as a state is identifying what are those high quality instructional materials and incentivizing districts to choose those exact materials. So the state of Arkansas was really moving forward to what we call implementing the science of reading. Definitely a move in the right direction. One of the things that we're doing through LEARNS to help support districts with that is look at how we monitor and identify students through dyslexia screeners. Right now, every district does something different. And we don't have a statewide unified coordinated progress monitoring system, especially in K-1 and 2, that embeds dyslexia screening. And we have a career and college readiness assessment in 3 through 10. It's kind of a big deal that we're making a big pivot back to criterion reference assessments in 3 through 10, end of course exams in algebra, biology, and geometry, but also having a unified coordinated progress monitoring system that is statewide so we can see where students need additional supports and make sure that we're able to allocate those resources. By embedding this in one system, what's happening now is our teachers are having to stop, depending on whatever the district system is, 7, 8, 9, 10 times a year to do a progress monitoring, to do a separate dyslexia screener, to do a different fluency assessment. We're putting out a statewide call to embed all of those into one system to hit. It won't be up for this school year, but it'll be in our classrooms for 24-25. That puts all of that in one thing so a teacher doesn't have to stop teaching to test, and that snapshot in time can happen 3 times and give the information that teachers need, and then help support teachers with training with high quality materials like what you're doing there, because we have to accelerate students and stop focusing on remediating students. I believe every student in the state of Arkansas is capable of learning, and we have to create a system that pushes them to do that.
Thank you. He's got a whole notebook. Are we going to go through all those pages?
No, because a lot of those questions got answered already. I'm wondering about the homeschoolers and the private schooling. It sounds like you're focusing on the public school system. And if I'm understanding this correctly, they're going to be put back a few years in this tiered system you've got, I guess. So you're not going to be addressing these third graders who can't read immediately. Is right. Am I missing something, or
I'm not
or
sure I'm following.
Why are they being
a couple different things that you talked about on. One, when you say that we're talking about improving public education, I'm a product of public schools. My children attend public schools. Neighborhoods need high quality public schools. What learns is the largest investment is helping to improve the neighborhood public school. That's where children grow up together. That's where their parents grow up together. You see generations attending the same schools. So our priority is to make them better. But we also want to empower parents, because if a school is not able to meet their needs, they have high quality choice options to them. So you talked about homeschool, because we talked a little bit about private school. The homeschool doesn't go into effect this school year, but it'll be working on getting implemented for the 24-25 school year, where that system and those rules will be put in place, because we got to build a system for accountability so that if parents that are choosing to participate in homeschool want to be in a reimbursement program, we have the proper guardrails in place so that we can make sure that parents are using those dollars to target education. But when you talk about third graders and when that rolling in is, Governor Sanders stated earlier, third grade is that benchmark, right? We actually just got new data from our students that took an assessment in spring this year for 23. So in 22, it was 35% of our students met that readiness rate. It actually went down this year, right? So this is more evidence why we need to stop playing red light, green light with learns and get this implemented, because we went down just over 2 points in third grade. So we know that that's pivotal. So looking at this year's kindergartners, are we making sure that every year they're getting access to high quality literacy instruction by a certified qualified teacher and getting the proper interventions the student needs or getting accelerated? When this cohort gets to third grade, we don't want to just push them along the system, because what happens in that pivot for instruction is those foundational years are heavily grounded on phonics and phonemic awareness and building vocabulary, measuring fluency, which leads to comprehension. When you get past third grade, you start using those skills where you learn how to read to apply them around content and instruction, and explicit systematic instruction in phonics and phonemic awareness isn't naturally part of that system. So before a third grader just automatically gets moved forward, the team has to come together with the parent and write an individual learning plan to make sure that if there's holes in their learning when they go to fourth grade and fifth grade and beyond, that somebody's addressing that. Right.
Thank you for your question. We'll jump over here. Well, make Catherine get a workout tonight.
Get your steps in.
Many years ago, the federal government implemented a program for special education called IDEA. Mm-hmm. That program has never been fully funded from our wonderful federal government. Will your LEARNS program be funded from the beginning, or will it be a stepped process? And will it specifically address the teachers and students in special education, because they have been relegated to the back of the bus for a long time?
Yeah. Well, the federal government is really good at coming up with ideas and then letting the state figure out how to pay for it. We actually operate very different in the state. We have to balance a budget, and we have to make sure that the legislation we're pushing forward, we have the ability to pay for. And so that was one of the first steps, and one of the important things that this group of people was really focused on is not also just not funding it for 1 or 2 years, but that we had the ability to take this on as a state for the long term. And so absolutely, the funding is not like a federal program. It will remain when it comes to teacher pay, the literacy programs, workforce development and career and training and technical programs. Those are things that we have invested in and made sure we have the ability to continue funding for the long term, because that's how the state operates. Very much like you might in your household, very different than the federal government. When it comes to specializing in that special education, I certainly want Secretary Oliva to comment here, because this is something I know he's very passionate about. That's actually where he started, as a teacher for special education students. That's one of the reasons I think that the education freedom accounts are so important, is because it allows a parent to make a decision. If they are not having their student's needs met, they have the ability to look at other options. It empowers parents to make sure that regardless of what challenges their student may have, they have the ability to figure out where they can best be educated. I have three kids, and just with my three kids, they all learn very differently, and they need very different things. And I should have the ability to decide how they can best be educated as their parent. And this provides that flexibility and those opportunities so that those child's needs are being met wherever that parent chooses to send their student.
Yeah. And I think the first part of your question is, you're right. And if I was talking to school principals and superintendents and we talk about the full cost of implementing the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act to make sure that those students have access to the course level and rigor that they deserve, some might say it's an unfunded mandate, right? So when we look at, does the federal government give us enough money to fully implement those mandates? Probably not. How does the state help support that? The school budget is very complicated, and there's what's called a matrix that gets into different categoricals. So there's some weights that are attended to that, where a school district may generate more funds for special education students. But I do think it's an opportunity that we can look at to see if there's a way to be more efficient and improve in that as well. But one of the things that I think is also encouraging is because a lot of times special education students may need what we refer to as related services or services outside of the school day to enhance what's happening in the school, is those parents would be able to qualify, not only for scholarship programs if that's part of the pathway that they want to choose, but high impact tutoring dollars and programs for school districts where we can target making sure the special needs students are prioritized, and then even access to literacy tutoring programs where if the parent's getting outside services above and beyond, there's dollars there to help cover that cost as well.
Thank you. Time for a few more. We'll go here and then, sorry.
We'll go over here.
I promised him first, so sorry. I just want to see how fast they can go back and forth.
Governor Sanders, Mr. Secretary, is there a plan within the LEARNS Act to increase the salaries of bus drivers, teachers' aides, and any classified staff within our schools?
Yeah. It's a great question. And one of the things that I have stolen from Secretary Oliva is how he talks about the educational community. While the teacher is vital and so important that we have good teachers in the classroom, it's not just the teachers that the students interact with. It is the bus drivers, the cafeteria workers. And it was important for us to actually put additional funding, and we did that. We raised that up, that hourly salary, for classified workers in the LEARNS legislation. And so that was important for all of this group to make sure that those individuals that are regularly interacting with students also knew that we valued that and that we increased those salaries as well. I think we allocated roughly about $20 million that's specifically for classified staff.
We have a question on this side. Oh.
Okay, I teach at Viola and I'm the business teacher there. And I understand the big importance of reading when it comes to not only reading and writing, but it also affects business classes and ag classes and facts classes. In this LEARNS Act, what are the plans for career and technical education at the high school level that will help us business teachers to be an important part of going forward in our schools?
Sure, I'll jump in here and then I'll pass it to Secretary Oliva. One of the things that without fail, no matter what part of the state I was in over the 2 years that I spent campaigning and running for governor, and no matter what type of industry I met with, what type of community leader, business leader, the number one challenge every single one of them would tell you that they had was recruiting a skilled, qualified workforce. It is the biggest challenge that almost every business in the state faces. Again, it doesn't matter whether you're in healthcare, hospitality, education, finance, or retail, recruiting that skilled, qualified worker is very difficult. So that was one of the things that was really important. We know that literacy is a very important part of the foundation. The career and technical training is one of the things I was talking about a minute ago that I'm so excited about. creating that dual track diploma was really important, so that a lot of the students, when they're in 8th and 9th, 10th grade, can start getting on a pathway to go directly into the workforce. There are a lot of students where a four-year university is going to be phenomenal, and they're going to thrive, and they're going to do really well. For some students, that's not the pathway to success for them, and we need to create a number of different opportunities so that every student has a pathway to success, and that's exactly what that did. So a lot of students will now have the ability to graduate with certifications to go directly into the workforce. However, we don't want that to be the end of their learning journey. We want them to have the ability to stack on top of that. If they graduate with that certification, but they want to continue their education, they should have the ability to do that and build on that foundation. So creating a lot more coordination and transparency in our programs is going to allow those students to continue doing that. And I think investing in our career, technical, trade, education is one of the most important investments that we can make as a state, because that is something that has been ignored for so long, and we have a huge shortage, and there is a massive demand for those type of workers. And so by investing in that, not only are we meeting the demand, but we're helping a sector of students be successful that have been ignored for far too long.
If I was to add to that, first, thank you for being a business teacher in high school, and for what you do to prepare students, because some of the content they're going to learn in your class, they're going to be able to apply to life, and they're going to see relevancy, and that's a big deal. So thank you for doing that. One of the things, as Governor Sanders is talking about, is workforce readiness. Sometimes there seems to be a disconnect for what K-12 values and says this is the foundation that we need to say, because for the starting point to be successful in life is getting at least a standard high school diploma. But the reality is to be successful in the workforce today, there's a plus to that standard high school diploma, whether that's industry certification, whether that's some college, whether there's some post-secondary opportunities. So there's an attainment rate that's calculated every year for states, and the attainment rate for 23 that was just recently published said that in the state of Arkansas, 87.3 adults have reached attainment. What attainment means is measuring the adults that are 25 and older in your community that have at least a high school diploma. So while a lot of people will say 87.3, that's pretty good, that puts Arkansas in the bottom 10, right? So when you look at the number of citizens that have a college degree or beyond, that number drops to about 28%. So there's opportunities to get students onto this career pathway, and we need to do a better job making sure there's not a disconnect between K-12 and what industry is actually looking for and the skills that they need, so people can walk in the door ready to learn and ready to earn. And so one of the things that I think Governor Sanders should talk about is her vision is really forced our state agencies to meet and work in an established a workforce cabinet and really appointed people to answer exactly that question, and is holding us accountable.
Yeah, just if I could piggyback, one of the things we did the first like couple days of being in office is we looked at some of the things that were already happening in state government. There were 7 different state agencies that have a workforce development office or component. And I asked how often they met, and one of the individuals that was part of that group said, well, we've never met. I said, I don't understand how that's possible. How you are literally tasked with addressing the same issue, and you all work for state government, and you don't talk to each other? And they kind of looked at me like it was the craziest idea that had ever been thrown out there. So we quickly put together an executive order and created the workforce cabinet. So now, not only are they required to meet, but they're required to put an update together so that we're actually all rowing in the same direction. We also created a position called the Chief Workforce Officer, a guy named Mike Rogers, who came out of the private sector, who has spent an entire lifetime going out and recruiting, training individuals to go directly into the workforce. And so now he is tasked with bringing all of those agencies together and making sure that we actually have a coordinated effort to addressing the workforce shortage in the state. They wake up every single day being tasked with how do we do it better? And that is oddly, which shouldn't be, but it's oddly something new for state government to try, is to actually coordinate and talk to each other. And I think that we're already starting to see that pay dividends and a real impact across our state. I think we're going to be one of the first states that figures out how to build that blueprint for addressing the workforce shortage that we have, frankly, across the country. I know we've got time for a couple more questions. We'll go to this group and then we'll come to you.
I agree there needs to be an educational reform, and I definitely applaud the acknowledgement of said need. It seems the act was fast-tracked with an omnibus, a take-all or nothing approach to educational reform. And what concerns me about it is mostly, okay, like the voucher system, the funding will be funneled into private and charter schools away from public schools. Like a $7,000 voucher will not cover all of the costs necessary to attend these other schools, tuition, books, transportation. And it seems that this money would be better spent increasing the levels of education in our public schools. Why are the public schools not sufficient? Instead, I see this crippling the public school system. How are you going to protect the public school systems from the collapse that this seems to be headed towards? The teachers more than likely will be leaving. Why wouldn't they? And that's my first question. The second one, you were
that was like seven, but I'm going to try to make sure I address them all when we come back to it.
How the public school system will survive with the funneling going towards private and charter schools. The next one was regarding, you were talking about the vocational programs. In other states, high schoolers are allowed to take college courses, and many of my friends in other states, their kids are graduating with associate's degrees. I want my son to go to college, and I definitely agree that other students need to take a more vocational route to go from high school to work. That's not what I want for my son. So will there be a system in place to be able to graduate with an associate's degree and a high school degree?
That was a lot to unpack, and I'm going to do our best to try to address each one of those questions. First, I want to address the fast-tracking. The idea that somehow this was fast-tracked is honestly, I don't mean to be rude, but it's frankly laughable. I literally spent 2 years traveling the state. I went to all 75 counties talking extensively about the fact that my number one priority when getting elected would be to be the education governor. And I spelled out exactly what that looked like. And I won with the historic overwhelming margin. So to me, that tells me that that is a demand from the people of this state. I didn't make it a secret. I literally broadcast. I spent $500,000 on TV telling people exactly what I was going to do when I got elected, and I won. Frankly, if this was fast-tracked and there wasn't support for it, I wouldn't be standing here, and that would have been a very clear message to me that this was not what Arkansas wanted. But I did win, and I won by a big margin, as did a lot of the individuals that are in our state legislature that campaigned on similar issues. So to me, that tells us not only is there broad-based support for it, but frankly, there's a demand from the people of this state that we do better. And that's exactly what we've worked extremely hard over the last several months to do, is make sure that we did better, that we delivered for students, that we delivered for parents, that we delivered for teachers. When it comes to the public education piece, like I said, this is the largest investment that we have had in public education in decades. We have not done anything big on education since my dad was governor nearly 20 years ago, and our numbers continue to fall. So to me, we couldn't just tinker with the system. We couldn't make a little change here and a little change here and expect a transformational difference. And I think our kids deserve a transformational difference, and that's what we delivered. I could not be more proud of the work that we did. And it wasn't like we made these decisions in a vacuum. Like I said, there is hundreds of thousands of dollars of research and data-proven evidence that these are things that work. We didn't just say, oh, I think this could be a good idea. We spent time meeting with parents, stakeholders, teachers, superintendents across the state to build out an education plan that delivered for our students. And I think that's exactly what it did, and it is a massive investment in public education, and one that I think every Arkansan has the ability to be proud of.
The last part of that question was about accelerated opportunities, and yeah, so and I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And I like I tell the governor all the time, I was like, I'm gonna learn all the data and all the numbers in state. 117 students graduated this past year with their AA degree at the same time as their bachelor's degree. I think that's really low. On a state this size, with about 30 to 33,000 students in a senior cohort, that number should be times 10. There are some challenges that we're going to work with the state colleges, because we don't have a common course code numbering system and making sure that the college credit articulates the high school credit, because there's some technical nuances. But that's adult problems that are hurting students, so we're going to get that fixed, and we're acting with urgency on that. And one of the conversations I've been having with superintendents is pushing acceleration. It's right around 17% of the students in the state of Arkansas took algebra by ninth grade. Took algebra by eighth grade. Typically, if you're gonna be pushed into where you're earning concurrent credit and earning not even just an AA, maybe even some students should be earning bachelor's degree, you need to be on more accelerated math paths. But some of our school districts don't even offer high school credits in middle school, so we're reimagining how we look at acceleration. 30% of the students this past school year in 9th through 12th grade took an accelerated course, meaning they were either in an AP course, an IB course, or a concurrent credit course. So there are some students that are getting access to accelerated opportunities, but it shouldn't be pockets of excellence. We should be creating a system where, regardless of the district or region you're in, you have those opportunities. But one of the real challenges, and one of the things that we need to make sure we're informing parents and meeting with school counselors and building out that schedule, 47% of last year's high school seniors, which was just over 15,000 students, didn't have a full schedule. They're just leaving school and going home and doing nothing, and they should be sitting in those college classes. And I'll even further exacerbate that, because I get excited, I'm sorry.
I love all the numbers.
But when you look at who went to our state college system, the percentage of students that left high school and went to remedial math is criminal. And one of the conversations that I've had with college presidents is we've got to figure out a way to eliminate remedial math, because these students should be ready for college algebra or beyond. 65% of the students that were sitting in remedial math this last semester graduated with a 3.0 GPA or higher. Something's disconnected. We have to overhaul this system.
Thank you. I think I promised to come over here. I think we've got time for this last question.
Hi, Governor Sanders. I just wanted to say thank you for being here tonight. I just had a question. I've heard everything about special education. I've heard about other programs in school, but I haven't heard anybody talk about GATE programs. My daughter was in a GATE program before we moved here to Arkansas. Unfortunately, I didn't agree with the school system here, so I sent them to a private school. But I'm wondering too, why is, you talk about workforce, but we took shop out of our classes, we took auto mechanics out of our schools, we took woodwork out of our schools. Not everybody is gonna go to college. It's not going to be for everybody. So therefore, if we are going to have a public school system and claim to be educating our children, how about educate them for going out into the world after high school, as well as like balancing a checkbook? You don't see that in school either.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I don't have much to differ with you on. I think we're making some great recruitments for school board races in the room here tonight, but I don't disagree. That's one of the reasons that we focus so much on that career and technical training, giving kids a different pathway. Because you're right, not every kid needs to go to college. We want that opportunity if that's the pathway for them, but if it isn't, they should have another direction to go where they can still have a lifetime of success. And there are a lot of opportunities for that, specifically in a state like Arkansas. And so we focused heavily on that. Don't disagree. I think for so long we focused specifically and strictly on what does a student know and not what can a student do. And we have to start asking that question. When they graduate, what are they capable of doing? Can they go directly into the workforce? Have we given them the tools they need to be successful? And if the answer is no, then we probably failed on our end, which is why we are trying to reimagine the way we look at so many pieces of education and why the LEARNS initiative was so important to get passed.
Is there going to be a portion that goes to the GATE program?
I'm not sure I'm specifically familiar with what that is.
I'm originally from Henderson, Nevada.
Welcome to Arkansas.
I love it here.
We knew you guys looked really smart, so we're glad to have you here in our state. Thank you.
From in Henderson.
It's gifted, a talented education.
I thought she was saying
my daughter was able to get into the GATE program when she was in first grade. She started elementary 3 years old. She got into a program, what they called for, what did they call it? It's where they come in and they work with special needs children. They say normal children. And it's like a monkey see, monkey do. Well, my daughter had to apply for this position at 3 years old, had to go and talk to, you know, because of her doing that successful program in Henderson, they continued it. I can't remember what it was called. But also when she hit the first grade, that's when they put her in a gifted and talented education. It was a higher degree because some kids get bored on everybody else's level. I mean, there's got to be an incentive for these kids that are very gifted minded like my daughter was.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying. I thought you were saying GAPE, and I wasn't sure what that was. So GAPE, the gift and talent education.
You got to pick up the Arkansas accent over the course so we'll be able to follow a little easier.
I agree, and unfortunately, sometimes our system pushes students into pathways by age, and that's not really going to be a successful system. So how are we pushing more accelerated opportunities, exposing students that are ready to move along the educational continuum to do that? I've met with families, and I've listened to stories, and I've talked to parents firsthand where they have children that want to be in rigorous accelerated opportunities like AP, and they're ready to take AP courses in ninth grade, and the school say, well, we don't offer that till you're in 11th, right? So we have to rethink how we set that up, or we have ninth graders that are ready to earn concurrent credit, and the school says, we don't offer it until you're in your senior year. Right now, when I talk about the number of industry certifications that are earned in the state of Arkansas, it was about just over 6,000 of them were earned in a student's senior year. It was like 15 of them were earned in seventh or eighth grade. Well, I'm sorry. We should not be waiting till the child's senior year to earn an industry certification, especially if we want them to earn stackable credentials. So gifted and talented students need to be in specialized programs, but need to be able to have accelerated opportunities and pathways. And that's something that we're going to continually have conversations to try to seek out and improve.
Thank you. We want to again say thank you so much for your willingness to come out tonight. I know that it is a big ask for people to spend their evening, but I don't think there's anything that we could talk about that's more important for the future of our state and the future of our country than investing in the kids right here in Arkansas. It's the reason that this was the number one priority that I had and that a number of these people right here on the front row had, and worked so hard to make sure we delivered for the students of our state, and I think we did that through the LEARNS Act. If I could get our legislative friends and partners here on the front row to stand up. Y'all are never shy. You literally ran for office, you can't be shy. So I wanna give them a huge round of applause. Thank Thank you guys so much. This would never have been possible without amazing representation from across the state. And this group right here has been vital, not just for the success of Learns, but we had one of the most successful historic legislative sessions that we've ever had in Arkansas. And I love to tell my dad that. So it's not a secret. Feel free to repeat that if you ever see him. But we would not have been able to have the level of success that we did without these people who fight hard for the people that they represent. At the end of the day, it's really simple for us. We love our state. Arkansas is home for me. This is where I grew up. This is where my husband and I chose to raise our kids. I want my kids to stay in Arkansas, to raise their own families. And I want the Arkansas that I love to be, and the one that I grew up in, to be the one that my kids inherit. I want them to wake up and know that they can do and be anything that they want, and they can do it right here in our state, because we gave them all the tools, all the opportunities, and all the freedom to go out and decide what they wanted with no obstacles in front of them. That's exactly what this does. This puts all the opportunity in the parents' hands and in students' pockets. And that's what we want to see, because we want our kids to be successful. And I know that they can be, and they can do that right here in Arkansas. Thank you so much for being here tonight. Thank you for your willingness to be with us and have this conversation. And most importantly, thank you for choosing to live in the best state in the country. So thanks for being here tonight.